Welcome everybody to this special Allergy Smart TV broadcast. Today I have Linda Koss on the phone, and Linda comes to us as a published author of two books already out there in the big wide world. She is the author of What's to Eat, the Milk-Free, Egg-Free, Nut-Free Food Allergy Cookbook, and How to Manage Your Child's Life-Threatening Food Allergies, Practical Tips for Everyday Life. So I actually heard an interview with Linda not too long ago, about 2 weeks ago, and I was quite impressed with the way that Linda was able to convey her message on food allergies, and I thought, I've got to get Linda on the phone. So welcome, Linda. I've finally managed to get you onto the phone.
Well, I'm very glad to be here.
Fantastic. Linda, I must confess, I haven't actually bought either of those two books of yours, so I've been a very naughty boy.
That's okay.
We've purchased a few other books, by the by, over the last 8 years of living and dealing with these food allergies, and however, I haven't managed to get a hold of those two books of yours. That is probably going to leave me a little bit in the dark as to who Linda Koss is, and I'm sure that some of my listeners and viewers would like to know a little bit more about Linda Koss. Can you give us a little bit of background on you?
Well, I'll talk about me first from the food allergy perspective. Besides being the author of these two books, I have a son who is now 17 and a half years old who has multiple life-threatening food allergies. When we started in the food allergy world, we were sort of pioneers because he's at the very beginning of the demographic trend of these food allergies. Even FAM, the National Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Organization here, was just a six-month-old organization when we got the diagnosis. So I'm the author of the book. I'm the parent of a kid who is about to graduate from high school. I started and ran a local food allergy support group for over 13 years. The group is still going strong. I have simply handed over leadership to somebody else. So I'm a mom who's been deep in the trenches of the food allergy world for close to 18 years now. In addition to that, I'm also a writer. Besides the books, I am a marketing writer. I work with local businesses to help their businesses to succeed. And besides the 17-year-old son, I have another child who's 15.
Mm. And you're in the U.S. Yes. Everybody knows I'm in Australia.
Yeah, I'm here in Southern California.
Southern California.
Beautiful, sunny Southern California.
Beautiful. Your other son.
Yeah.
Does he have any food allergies?
Not at this point. He did as a baby. They were never as severe as his brother's, and I actually went on his brother's diet to nurse him, and I think that helped, although the latest studies say it doesn't really matter. I disagree. And
the studies keep changing, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, for me, when I was nursing the second child on the dairy, egg, and nut-free diet, there were a few times when accidents happened. I was at a restaurant or a friend's house, and they accidentally served me something that they weren't supposed to, and the baby would scream at every feeding for 3 days. And they say that whatever you eat stays in your milk for up to 3 days. So to me, that was direct evidence that he was reacting to the allergens, regardless of what the latest medical advice is. So I took steps to avoid sensitizing him. I waited till he was much older than normal to introduce the foods. By the time he had a second serving of milk and a second serving of egg, he was breaking out in hives from head to toe. And then, you know, we kept him off it for another few years, and he outgrew it all by the age of 5. I also gave up nuts before conception with the second child. I took no chances with the nuts.
That's extreme, isn't it?
Well, you know, we were already sort of a nut-free house as it was because of the first child.
That's
you know.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as extreme as it might sound.
Mm. Well, you know, to tell you the truth, now that I think back at it, my wife Melanie, I think she probably did exactly the same thing, because
child.
Our first had anaphylaxis to dairy, eggs and nuts. I just don't think it was a part of the equation. Although I know that she did still have dairy, but in a limited capacity.
Yeah.
So, interesting. Hmm.
So the second child outgrew it all, but, you know, he had very little exposure, and our household was already set up to be dairy, egg, and nut-free, and we just told everybody else that he was as bad as allergy as his brother, even though it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was much easier than to say, this one's severe and this one isn't.
Mm-hmm.
That just leads to mistakes and confusion.
Because I think a lot of people are probably in a very similar situation. I know that we were. And, having the second and even third sibling, it does become a bit of a minefield as far as food within the house. Who can consume and who can't consume? And then what do you do when you go out? Big questions there. How did you deal with going out where the second son could eat something and the first son couldn't eat something?
If it was something where we were bringing the food ourselves, then I brought the same for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a situation where, say, we're going to a restaurant and the first child cannot eat the food but the second child can, then I would let the second child eat the food. And we would follow our usual procedure of making sure that he was very clean about it, and we cleaned him, and nothing spread, and they didn't sit next to each other, and that sort of thing. But over the years, I taught my second child to eat very, very neatly, to not make a mess, to not spread his food around, and to wash up as soon as he finishes eating anything allergenic. You know, he just became a very neat-eating child because I started teaching him when he was very little.
What are the ages of your two boys now?
My child with the food allergies will be 18 this summer, so he's 17 and a half, and my other child is 15.
15.
So I have two teenage boys.
There you go. Yes, challenges. The interesting thing is that today I want to talk about schooling. A lot of my viewers and listeners already know what anaphylaxis is, already know what food allergies are. They're fairly up with that.
Right.
I'm actually introducing a section onto the blog soon where I can put in some video articles where it explains all the basics.
That's a good idea.
Just covers the basics. So if somebody new comes to the site, they can just get the basics. And then of course it goes on from there where then you can go and get books for the extra information. But just the quick basics that if you happen to fall upon the site, then you've got the basics. I think you might even have something similar on your website.
No, I don't, but there's a lot of websites that do.
Yeah. I've noticed over the years when we first came on board, this was 8 years ago, very little information out there.
You should have been there 17 years
ago. Yeah. Yeah.
Because there was no internet 17 years ago.
Nope, there wasn't. And we basically had to piece a little bits of information together. I guess that's how you sort of came across all of your information. I mean, you've obviously written two books, so over the years you've accumulated a heap of information. Where did you get your information from?
Most of it I got from personal experience, and also in the support group that I started 13 years ago, we would spend every meeting hashing out the issues. You know, people come to the meeting and say, gee, we have this problem at school, we have this problem with travel, we have this problem with whatever, and everybody at the meeting would sit there and try to come up with solutions because there weren't any resources out there to answer the questions. So we would figure it out ourselves. And then, of course, as resources became available, I read them all.
Mm.
But if I had waited that long, it would have been too late.
That's it. And so you basically became the go-to resource and thought, well, I should put this together so that everybody else can benefit from it too.
That's what it boiled down to, that I realized that I had a lot of knowledge that I wanted to share. Because why should anybody else have to reinvent the wheel when I've already figured out the answers, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. The support group that you mentioned, it's still operating now. Are you still a member of that support group?
Yeah, I'm still a member. I just handed off leadership because I felt with my son getting into the college years, it'd be better to have leadership that, you know, would be sticking with it for longer, maybe some people whose children are a little younger.
Yep.
Because as my son's moving out of the house, I can't promise to go to every meeting.
Well, that's it. I had a question regarding schools, and and I just wanted to ask, what is the what sort of things did you look at when you sent the guys off to school to reduce risk with regards to those food allergy related issues that might crop up while the children are at school?
There's really a number of things that you could do to reduce the risk at school, assuming the school personnel are willing to work with you. The first thing I think is most important is to straighten out the issue of who is going to be trained to recognize and treat an allergic reaction. Preferably, everybody on staff would be. It's really not a comfortable thing if the school says just a nurse is going to be trained. What if the nurse isn't available when the emergency should strike? So you want to get the staff trained in knowing what to do. You want to make sure that the child's emergency medication, the EpiPen, is readily available within a minute of wherever the child's going to be. For an older child, you can make arrangements for the child to wear the EpiPen in a waist pack or something so it's always on their person. But for a younger child, I don't think that's safe. You don't want a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old running around with a shot of epinephrine strapped to their body. The other kids might get curious about it, you know. So for younger children especially, you want to make arrangements to have the medication in the classroom, in the lunch area, available in the playground, and anywhere else where the child is likely to be. You might need to, you know, provide a couple EpiPens to have on campus. So once the emergency medication issues are worked out, the next thing you need to work out is the issue of food. It's really nice if you can make arrangements to banish food from the classroom itself, to say that they won't be eating in the classroom, they won't be using food in any classroom art projects or classroom lessons, so that you wouldn't have to worry about the allergenic residue being all over the classroom materials. You would also want to ask if the children could have their hands washed or wiped down with little hand wipes before they enter the classroom. When they come in from the morning, to make sure that their hands are clean from whatever they ate at home, and when they come in after lunchtime or any other food breaks during the class day. So the goal here with the hand washing and the food out of the classroom is to make sure there's somewhere on campus, in this case the classroom, that's somewhat of a safe haven, which is not just for the sake of the student, but it's just for the sake of the teacher. You know, you want the teacher to be able to relax and not be constantly worried about the allergens. You know, if they know that there's no allergens in the classroom, then it's a more relaxing atmosphere for everybody. Beyond that, there's long lists of things that you need to do to create a safe school environment, but these are some of the big basic ones. How to create a safe lunch area. For some children, you might want to arrange for special allergen-free tables. For others, that may or may not be necessary. It depends on the allergies. It depends on the severity of it all. You want to talk about telling the other children about the allergies. For instance, I know FAN has their Be a Pal program for younger children. I think Anaphylaxis Australia has a similar thing. Maybe it's Be a Mate. Is that it?
That's correct, yep.
To help teach the other children about the food allergies that the other children will be understanding and will help the child to feel safe and will understand why that child can't share their food or why they can't do certain things. And when you get the other children on board, usually they really look out for the food allergy child, especially in the younger years. You know, when you're dealing with young children, they don't want their friend to get sick. They don't want anything to happen to their friend. So educating the other children is a really good idea.
Did you ever have to switch schools for your boys between years at any stage, or they were always at the same school?
No, we didn't have to switch schools. For allergies, we only switch schools at the appropriate times when you switch schools because it's time to switch.
Because I think that also might help too. So once you establish a routine within the institution where you're at, within the school, then of course the kids obviously become comfortable and confident in that arena where everybody's on the same page, and then have to switch, you've got to start from scratch almost, depending on obviously which school and what their education level's like with regards to dealing with their food allergies. I think a lot of schools now are becoming more aware. They have
much
to.
More.
They have to. And purely by sheer numbers of children that are coming through. I think at the school where we're at, even 3 years ago when we first started there, there was only two children that had an EpiPen. There was ours, and then there was another one in high school. And now,
for 8 years, we were the only one.
There you go.
There you go. The only one for 8 years.
And people probably looked at you like you had two heads or something.
Pretty much. There was a huge education factor because it wasn't in the media, it wasn't in the news, and it wasn't well known at all when we first entered the school system.
Jeez, so. you must have really had a battle there to try and get your point across and just get a bit of compassion, I guess.
I think the biggest problem was getting anybody to believe me. Most people assumed I must be exaggerating, that this was just so ridiculous and absurd that it couldn't be possible that some small amount of a common food could actually kill my child. I'm clearly a nutcase, not to, no pun intended,
And I totally agree, because we had to educate, but the general concept was already there. It was already in place, and so we weren't telling them something that they didn't already know. They just didn't have the tools in their vocabulary in order to make it work as safe as what it could. And I think that if people are looking for a prospective school, or looking, their children are ready to go into a school, I think it's important that the things that you just spoke about there, those six things you talked about: training, medication, food in the classroom, hand washing, safe lunch areas, and general education. I think every single one of those things is absolutely should be spoken about with whatever school it is that the children might be at or going into. And I think if you sit down with the administration of the school and talk about all those things, I think you'll be well on the way to having a great school being able to reduce risk, I think, for food allergies for the kids. Do you agree?
And these days you could also emphasize with the administration of the school that there are so many of these children in school today, and schools across the country and across the world are safely accommodating them. This is not an impossible situation. This is very doable, as proven day after day in so many locations.
That's exactly right.
Something that you have to the advantage today is that you could say, well, it can be done, it is being done. Whereas when I started, it was, gee, I hope this could be done. It's not like I had a lot to point to say, look, it's being done in thousands of other places, because it wasn't.
On the education point that we were just talking about there, now that's we spoke about educating the children within the school, and obviously the school has control over what they teach the kids in that arena, and you sort of can't really get too much involved in how they educate their friends and their other.
Although you could provide materials.
Oh, yeah.
You could provide classroom materials and videos and books and worksheets and all that material that's available out there.
But what about the other children's parents? Did you ever have any strategies or anything, or did you ever communicate with the other children's parents? What is your general advice for that?
My general advice for that is, what you need to communicate to the other children's parents depends entirely on what you need in the way of accommodations at school. If, for instance, you need them to ban peanuts, then this has to be explained to the other parents, and I think that explanation should come from the school administration. I don't think it should come from you as a parent, because then all that hostility is directed at you. It should come down from on high that this is the new policy. If you need parents to only send certain foods to class parties, or you know, if you need them to do something that accommodates your child, I really think it's best if that communication comes from the school principal. It should not come from you as a parent. Because when there's problems and when people object to these new policies, you don't want them taking it out on you and your child. You want them talking to the principal. So for me, I didn't do anything formal to communicate with the other parents. But I would informally, as the occasions arose, educate them about what my son's situation was and how severe it was and how much we truly appreciated anything anybody did that helped us. I do think that you need to express the appreciation when people are helping out.
Yeah, in our circumstance anyway, it's actually a rarity for other parents to, I'll go so far as to say, show some compassion. And we always thank them when they do because it's glaringly obvious.
Yeah. Now, sometimes you get lucky with that and sometimes you don't.
We still struggle with family, other family members. How did you find that sort of, you know, the difference between strangers and taking it on board and family members taking it on board?
I found that strangers were very much hit or miss, and I would say there was probably a friendship or two that went by the wayside in the early years because the friends just weren't willing to deal with our special circumstance. For family, everybody's always been very well-meaning. Nobody's ever wanted to purposely do anything harmful for my child. But there's been some family members who get it and some who were less capable of getting it, if you know what I mean.
I do.
You know, my grandmother, who has since passed away, when the children were little and they were both on the special diet, she didn't quite understand that she couldn't just hand them food. She would start to, and then she'd remember maybe she's not supposed to, and then she'd get all confused about it. It's not that she wanted to hurt them. It's just something she couldn't quite get in her head. You know, she would say, I had all those years as a preschool teacher, and nothing ever like this. You know, this is insane. This is crazy. You know, how am I supposed to remember this from all those years? Because she was a preschool teacher for her career. So she was used to dealing with small children like that, and she was used to dealing with them in a certain way. So she meant well, but I wouldn't bother to leave them in her care alone, you know.
And just where we were just talking about education, pardon me, education again, What about teaching your own children their boundaries for their food allergies? How did you go about that, or have you got some tips on that?
Yeah, I think that teaching your own children about the food allergies is a very gradual process that happens over many years. You start when they're young, and you continue, and, you know, I feel like I'm still continuing sometimes, to teach them age-appropriate information and teach them as they get older to handle more and more of it on their own. So for instance, when they're very young, you start by teaching them and telling them that they have the allergies and that certain foods might make them sick, that they shouldn't take food from strangers. You know, I always laugh that other people teach their children not to talk to strangers. We said don't take food from strangers. You know, because there's always that well-meaning mother at the playground who's handing cookies to all the children in sight so that nobody will feel left out, you know. And you have to teach your children to say no, that they can't take food from strangers. As they get older, you want to teach them what foods they're allergic to. For instance, when my own child was about 7 years old, he was out somewhere and he picked up a hazelnut and said, "What's this?" And that's when I realized that I had been so careful to keep him away from nuts that I hadn't even thought to, like, show him a picture of them. So, you know, that's something that I overlooked, that I hope others don't make this mistake, that as they get older, they shouldn't just know I'm allergic to milk. They should know, what does milk look like? What does cheese look like? What does a nut look like? What does another sort of nut look like? So that would be, you know, you're gradually giving them more and more information. When they learn to read, you start teaching them to read the labels. As they get older and more verbal, you teach them that if they start to feel sick, if they feel funny after they eat something, if their tongue feels funny, if their tummy feels bad, they need to speak up. When you send them off to school, you need to role play with them about what do they say and who do they say it to if they think maybe they're having a reaction. But when they're very young, you're excited if you could just get them to tell you that maybe there's a problem here. Another thing that I always taught my son was, when in doubt, spit it out. If they have something in their mouth and suddenly they think maybe there's something wrong with this food, don't worry about being rude, don't worry about anything, spit it out. Spit it out now. And then we'll sort it out later. And then eventually, you reach the point where you do have to break it to the child that the food allergy could be deadly. You know, they've known all along it might make them sick, but you need to, at some point, either you're going to tell them or they're going to hear it in the news or on, or at school or something, that it's potentially fatal. And you need to be prepared to deal with that. And for that, it's really best to emphasize with the child all the things that you do to keep them safe. You know, yes, there is this potential risk, but we're doing this and this and this and that and the other to make sure that the risk is as small as possible, and that that's why we're so proud of you, my dear child, that you are so cooperative in the whole program. So you just emphasize the positive of what you're doing. Now, because sooner or later, they're going to find out. My own son found out way before I intended to tell him that it was a potentially fatal thing. And he was a very sensitive child, and it took a while to get him to not be upset about that.
And how old was he when
he was maybe 8 or 9.
Yeah.
He was about 8 or 9, and there was something on the news about it, and that's how he found out. Something on a television show.
I think we personally are at that level right now. We've never actually mentioned anything about it being fatal. It's just that you'll get very sick, and obviously we have all the medication and all the know-how, so you can combat it quite quickly. But yeah, I think it's getting to the point now where it's we might have to take the education to the next level.
Well, from my own experience, I'd recommend that you take it to the next level before it gets thrust upon you unexpectedly. It would have gone better if I had sat down and had a chat about it than if he had been, you know, as he was, watching a TV show and gotten the news that way.
I think it's a fine line as well. You don't want to scare them too early,
right.
and have them running around every minute of the day wondering if they're going to to get themselves into some serious problems.
Right. I hadn't intended to tell my son until he was about 10, but it did get thrust upon me earlier than planned. And with it being in the news so much these days, I think that's more of a likelihood than it used to be. Or that some other child will inform your child because they know, because that's what was in the notes that went home to the parents. So, you know, that is sort of a problematic area. Like I said, you know, you have to emphasize that you're in control of the situation and we're all with the program and here's what our program is and we're proud of you for cooperating.
Do you have any tips on giving the kids perspective? I guess we've already sort of spoken a little bit about that with telling them, you know, look at all the things that we do to with your food allergies. I'm sort of leading this question into keeping the kids grounded and not getting them too stressed out about the whole thing.
Well, I think that your goal as a parent should be to help the child to accept the food allergies as just another part of who he or she is. You know, your child has brown hair and blue eyes and loves bicycle riding and has food allergies, that you want it to be that level of acceptance. And in order to do that, I think you have to start by looking at yourself as the parent because, you know, you're the parent, you set the tone, you teach by example, and this means that you need to keep perspective yourself. If you as the parent if the child sees that when you're trying to cope with food allergy-related issues, you don't cope very well, if the child's always hearing you complain about the unfairness of it and the burden of it and how horrible it is, then the child is going to lose perspective. The child will see the whole thing as an unfair burden and a horrible, terrible thing, and won't feel okay about the whole thing. On the other hand, if your child sees that you manage the food allergies in a matter-of-fact and uncomplaining way, if the child sees that you do it all with confidence and with competence, then the child will gain a sense of safety and well-being about the issue as well, and will find it much easier to accept food allergies as just another part of life. So I really think that a big key for parents is to look at themselves first and to see what sort of an example they're giving and to see how they're coping with it themselves, because it's going to be such a big influence on how well the child copes.
That makes a lot of sense.
And for me, you know, I realized how much I had succeeded in this past year when my son was filling out the essays for his college applications. And one of the colleges had a question that read something like, "Tell us about your world." You know, one of those typical college entrance questions that you could say anything. And I looked at that and I thought, wow, here's a perfect opportunity to talk about the food allergies. My son refused to mention food allergies. He said, "That has nothing to do with my world. The food allergies are nothing. I'm going to talk about the things that are important to me." So, you know, I realized, wow, he really does just accept the food allergies as another part of who he is. He didn't see it as anything of any importance to mention on the college applications, for instance, where you're supposed to tell all about yourself and what's influenced your life and that sort of thing.
Mm.
So it's possible.
It's fantastic. That's fantastic. The I just going back to the schools, and and we mentioned in your list there of things you can do to minimize risk. You mentioned banning nuts. What if you have like we do, you and us, a dairy-based allergy, or an egg allergy, or a wheat allergy?
Right.
What's your take on that?
Well, you really can't ask the schools to ban everything. And I think the only reason why some schools are banning nuts and are going with the nut ban is, number one, there's a lot more kids with nut allergies. But more importantly, at least here, where peanut butter is so popular, peanut butter does not wash off of things well. It's a very sticky, oily substance, and it just doesn't come off. But I don't really think it's reasonable to expect the schools to ban all of the top allergens plus everything else that somebody might be allergic to. It's just not something that you could expect the whole population to go on that diet, and it's not something that they'd even manage to enforce.
Mm.
So you have to rely upon all the other procedures you could put into place to minimize the risk.
Yeah, we always feel a little bit excluded, I guess, even though we have peanut anaphylaxis. The dairy anaphylaxis for us is still, at 8 years, it is still extremely high. And and for us, when we approach the school and we see, oh, well, they want to ban nuts, well, that's all well and good, but it's sort of a little bit discrimination, a little bit of a discrimination against the other children who have different allergies.
Well, for me, when we started with schools, frankly, it never even occurred to me to ask for a nut ban. I was so busy trying to get them to be willing to use an EpiPen that something like a nut ban was way out of the realm of something you would consider asking for. And at the time, he was very anaphylactic to nuts, to dairy, and to egg. And we were able to work around it with a lot of cleanliness, with a lot of awareness, and so forth. Luckily, he does not have any reactions to airborne particles, so we never had to worry about the smell of it or the particles, just, you know, the actual foods. So the nut bans are something that is a relatively newer thing, and I really think it's come about because of the problem of peanut butter. And yes, it could be discriminatory, like you said, but I don't think it's reasonable to expect the entire population to go on a diet that gives up, say, every allergen out there.
Absolutely. And I'm more than happy to go on the record. I've said it before and I'll continue to say it again. I'm anti-ban. I'm not big on banning substances. I think it leads to complacency. We've seen it time and time again at the few schools that we've been at over the years, and it's brought on complacency with the staff and the
yeah, that makes sense.
And the other parents and we, you know, products do come in, even though you say they're not supposed right. to come in, they do end up coming in. Just the nature of the beast, and if everybody thinks that they're not there and they're actually there, well, that's a recipe for disaster.
I do think that banning peanut butter, not just all nut products, but peanut butter in specific, is not such a bad idea because of the problems of the peanut butter itself. You wind up with peanut butter residue all over the campus. Mm. And at an absolute minimum, I really think that the school cafeteria itself should not be serving peanut butter. Mm. You know, here you have, it's a very common thing served in the cafeteria. And if you have a number of kids with peanut allergy, which is becoming the case in a lot of schools, it's just insanity for the cafeteria to be passing out peanut butter sandwiches. You know, that would be, even if they don't want to ban people from bringing it in, certainly a simple thing would be for the cafeteria not to serve it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Our school systems differ a little bit. We, of course, have cafeterias as well, depending on which school you go to. Of course, there's actual designated eating areas. Most of the schools here in Australia, the children just eat outside.
That's how it is in California.
Okay,
but that's not how it is where, you know, like on the East Coast where they have snow. They have
exactly.
Indoor eating areas.
It's very dependent on the location.
Yeah, here the kids eat outside under a covered area that's sort of right next to the playground. And there's no way to wash their hands or anything after they eat. They eat, they throw out their garbage, and they head straight to the playground.
Yeah. Yep.
Whereas on the East Coast, they're eating indoors, and there's a door to the room, and they could wash everybody on the way out. But so, we don't have that here.
So what would you say, what's your biggest frustration? What would have been your biggest frustration then when you were going to send the kids off to school?
My biggest frustration was trying to get anybody to believe me and getting people to be willing to work with me on something that they had never heard of. You know, my biggest frustration has always been being the trailblazer. You know, on nearly every phase, nearly every new activity that my son has ever had, we've been the first. Now at least there's the advantage of people have heard of it, but for many years we're not only the first, but we were the first to inform people that this problem exists. So that, for me, was always the biggest frustration.
So,
and now, actually...
Yeah, go on, sorry.
What I was going to say is, in the past month, we've had the absolute exhilarating joy of not being a trailblazer somewhere. As I mentioned, my son's going to be moving out and going to college in September. And when I made the phone calls to start talking about, you know, will they be able to feed him and what are we going to be able to do, for the first time ever, he was not the first one. They're already accommodating this. They have procedures in place. And we just need to join the program. It's wonderful.
That would have felt fantastic.
Yeah, it's just wonderful that, you know, we're not the first and they already know what to do. We had never experienced that before. In all these years,
I've read a couple of articles recently from a young college student, a young male college student, and he, I think the story went along the lines of, he was woke up early one morning, went down to the cafeteria at the college, somebody had swapped the soy and the milk jugs side by side, and they'd put them in the wrong jug. They put the milk in the soy jug and the soy in the milk jug, and I read that sort of stuff, and I mean, obviously you're at that level now, I'm not at that level now, and that's right. Scary to me.
It's scary, but I also question, didn't he notice? They look different.
Well, they taste very different too. I think the story when he actually ate the whole bowl or something like that.
Yeah, that was the story, and I thought, my goodness, this child wasn't awake, and I depend upon my child to be a little more aware than that.
Yeah,
you know, that cow's milk and soy milk don't look the same. Don't smell the same, don't taste the same.
I could see maybe having
one little spoonful, but a whole bowl and not noticing?
Yeah. I can testament that they certainly don't taste the same. When we first were diagnosed with this, I decided I would switch to soy.
And yeah,
it took me 3 weeks. 3 weeks. It was not easy.
I never managed to switch to soy. I just gave up milk. I can't take the soy.
No, my wife couldn't do the switch, so she still has her milk. But I persevered, and 3 weeks. That's how long it took to switch.
Yeah, no, but I read that story about the college student also, and to me, what seemed most alarming was that this child ate the bowl full and didn't notice. You count on a child of that age to be much more aware.
There's always two sides to the story, though, and invariably these stories somehow get a little bit muddled in the mix. So you've got to take it with a grain of salt. But the concept is very real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My own son was at a program, a 4-week program at a local college last year, where he lived on campus and ate in the cafeteria, and they kept his thing of soy milk because he outgrew the dairy allergy, but he never learned to like dairy. He couldn't make the switch in the other direction. But they basically kept his soy milk separate because they were worried that somehow something could get cross-contaminated like that. So the arrangements we had was that they would give him a separate thing, a container of soy milk from the kitchen rather than whatever was out there in the line, because we were worried about just that sort of a problem. You know, if he took it straight from the box, then he knew that it was soy milk.
Mm.
And that nothing else had ever been in that big thing that it was pouring out of.
Mm. Is there something you wish you'd done during the school years that you didn't?
Not that I could think of, to be honest. It all went pretty smoothly. I think we handled it pretty well, all things considered. And, you know, we never had a major incident at school. We never had major problems. Everything went well. I mean, it would have been easier if there was more information available, if everybody knew about the problem and so forth. But I can't think of anything I would have done differently.
You whispered to me the other day that you were writing another book.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, it's another cookbook. It's the sequel to my first cookbook. The first cookbook is called What's to Eat, and this one is called What Else is to Eat, the Dairy, Egg, and Nut-Free Cookbook. So it's another 115 dairy, egg, and nut-free recipes, and it will be available round about September of this year.
Okay.
So I'm very excited about this. It's got a huge emphasis on fast and easy cooking for today's busy, busy lifestyles.
Oh, interesting, interesting. I might have to get you to send me one of the recipes, and I'll cook it on the show.
Oh, that'd be good.
Does that sound all right?
Sounds like a lot of fun. That way, I could watch somebody else cooking my recipes.
Yeah. Well, the trouble is that I'm a hopeless cook. I'll put my hand up and say I'm a hopeless cook, and I'm going to challenge myself and put myself in front of a camera and attempt to cook something.
I've got some really easy recipes that even a hopeless cook will be able to handle.
That's great. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
You know, I figure a lot of my target audience are people who are cooking out of necessity because of their child's allergies. Perhaps before the allergies hit, they never cooked at all. They ordered out, they took takeout, whatever. And now all of a sudden they have to cook. Maybe they don't really know how. Maybe they don't really like it. Maybe they're not very good at it. So I try to create recipes and write instructions with these people in mind. because the truth is a lot of people weren't cooking before they had to.
Well, that's right, because you could just go and just grab anything you wanted off the shelf and off you go.
Right.
Yes, it's very different. We had a huge shift in the kitchen and with regards to food preparation and which is a whole nother topic altogether. I mean,
right.
we could talk all day on the varying topics. I mean, we've only just touched the surface of this stuff,
yeah.
but we have a time limit today, so we're going to stick to it. The thing that we found was that our shopping experience changed dramatically, and the consumption, the food that we could bring into the house changed dramatically, and what we find is that fortunately we don't have any allergies to fruit and vegetables or any of the meat groups. So
right,
we can still actually prepare, as you found, obviously writing two cookbooks, that there's a wide range of foods that you can still prepare, even though you have restrictions on certain foods. It doesn't stop you from preparing decent meals.
Well, I think it doesn't stop me from preparing delicious meals. I don't like to settle for decent.
Yeah, bad choice of words there.
No, I always tell people, unless the child has a long, long list of allergens. A lot of people will say, oh, my child is allergic to dairy, egg, and nut, for this example. What in the world could we possibly eat? And I say, focus on what they can eat. Don't focus on what they can't eat. Don't be thinking about all that cheese or eggs or whatever. But if you're just allergic to dairy, egg, and nut, as you just said, that leaves the fruits, that leaves the vegetables, that leaves the grains, that leaves the meat, that leaves the fish, that leaves beans, that leaves a whole world of things that your child's not allergic to. So focus on those things. You know, don't put your focus on what you had to give up. Put your focus on all the really delicious things that are still left, because it's a much happier mindset.
Well, Linda, you've been fantastic on this call. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we go?
Not really. I think you and I both could talk about food allergies all day long.
Yeah, well, it's a topic that when you live and deal with it on a day-to-day basis, you can't help but be able to talk about it all day. That's the thing, because you've got to be across it at all the levels.
Yeah, and I think anybody who lives with it for a couple years in a row becomes an expert by necessity.
That's it.
You know, there's just so much to it.
Well, Linda, thank you very much for your time today. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
It's been fantastic talking to you, and I'll let you get back to whatever it is you're doing today. I know it's lunchtime there, so I guess you should probably have some lunch if you haven't had your lunch
right.
already.
And it's breakfast where you are, so
yeah, it's breakfast time for me, so I better go off and see what the kids should be rousing by now, if not already up and about. So great stuff. Thank you very much, Linda.
And I'm just curious, since this was a long talk, how much of this do you expect to edit it down to?
I can break it up.
I
can break it up. It's how long has it been? About almost an hour.
Yeah.
Gee, that's going to have to be
way too long for one podcast.
That's going to have to be a couple of episodes. Yeah. Fantastic. But once again, thanks, Linda.
You're welcome.
I hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay. Bye.
Cheers.